I'm Dane Neal, and this is Dining Out Loud with Penny Pollack and Michael Nagrin, the Dueling Dining Critics Podcast. Their opinions are their own and solely reflect their experiences. Here's Penny and Mike. This is Dining Out Loud.
I mean, the sort of the elephant in the room about ABBA is it has like probably the greatest outdoor deck in the history of Chicago restaurants, right?
Yes, it has the most fantastic terrace. The room actually feels very open, and it had an amazing vibe. It just feels so alive.
Hi, this is Mike Nagrin, and you're listening to Dining Out Loud, the only dueling restaurant critics podcast in Chicago and the world. All right, so Penny, in the 70s, were you like a big ABBA fan?
I wasn't. I was changing diapers.
Okay. I was born in the 70s, but I love ABBA, you know, like unapologetically, just like I like Taco Bell.
Well, I like their music. I didn't follow it then, but it's hard to not like their music.
Yeah, well, that's right, because they are like literally like bigger than the Beatles almost. Like they've sold more albums than God, right? So obviously everybody who tells you they don't like ABBA loves ABBA because they're just secretly like in the closet about it. Which, when I first heard there's this new restaurant from the Let Us Entertain You folks and it's called ABBA, I was like, is this a ABBA-themed restaurant? And I was like thinking about the great possibilities, right? Like Dancing Queen Daiquiris and like Fernando Filet Mignon.
You clearly did not go to Hebrew school.
I was excited. But it turns out it is not an ABBA-themed restaurant. It's ABBA, and you can tell us, because
father.
I didn't go to Hebrew school.
ABBA is father in Hebrew, as Ema is mother in Hebrew. So Ema was first down the block from Beatrix over
the sister restaurant
on Clark Street. And where there's an Ema, I guess there has to be an ABBA.
So the chef, CJ Jacobson, super tall dude, which is like, I feel bad because, you know, that's all he hears every day, 400 times a day. Oh, my God, you're so tall. But he is. He's like 7 foot or something. And he played professional volleyball at one point. He was a top chef dude. If I remember right, I think I don't know if he was the guy that was making out with some girl in one of the episodes, but I feel like maybe he was. But CJ started with lettuce as part of their intro concept.
Right.
And he had one of their first restaurants. He also was part of the intro dim sum concept. And then, of course, Ema, which you talked about. And I'm going to be frank about this, which is I have not liked anything CJ has really done, including Ema. I was really tough on Ema when they first opened. And then when we ate at Pacific Standard Time recently, I think I even mentioned to you, like, I was worried it was going to be like Ema Electric Bugaloo Part 2 because it just felt like the same. And I was like, that's not going to be good.
I don't want to rip Ema, but it underwhelmed me. But it had a certain comfort food level from a certain part of the world, and I would go there occasionally just for that good feeling.
So the first thing, I mean, the sort of the elephant in the room about ABBA is it has like probably the greatest outdoor deck in the history of Chicago restaurants.
Fantastic.
Right?
And as I was just saying, it's not a two-story restaurant, but you have to take an elevator.
Yeah, it's a little secret agent-y, right? You know what was really weird? When you walked in, there was a woman on the bottom floor standing in front of a host
right.
stand. So my wife and I waited behind two people, figuring we'd give them the reservation name. And so we waited for like 5 minutes for her to finish up with whoever she was with. And then when we got there, she's like, what can I do for you? And we're like, we have a reservation. She's like, go upstairs, the elevator. Like, they've literally paid somebody just to stand there to tell you where to go because it's so confusing.
But RPM Italia has an elevator, but they do check you in downstairs. Guys, yeah. If you're all going to do elevators, get it together and decide where your host stand is.
I think you just give people like a treasure map via text and let them find their way. You know, it's like much cooler that way.
So, yes, it has the most fantastic terrace. The room actually feels very open. Obviously, the room is under a roof, but there's lots of greenery, and it has a very airy feeling to it, and it had an amazing vibe. It just feels so alive, but not overwhelming, which is a very hard thing to accomplish.
Yeah, so the outside, you got views of the skyscrapers of downtown, you got like ivy flowing, you got plants everywhere, you got all these couches. It's like cool kids, like everybody though, right? Like you don't feel excluded if you're not like some hipster on Instagram. Before our podcast, we were talking a little bit about Trump, and you know, listen, Republicans eat food too, so we don't need to go there. But like, one of the things I feel like is this place is so cool that like, no matter who you are, Republican, conservative, Democrat, whatever, like this is a place that is so enjoyable that if you could get together with your worst enemy on this veranda and just drink and be happy.
Let's have the next summit there.
Well, here's the thing. My job as a critic is to pay attention to everything, right?
Right.
I don't just get to eat and enjoy it. Like, I have to look around and see what's going on. And one of my responsibilities is like, well, what does the dining room look like? And I was so focused on that veranda and the people watching and the whole thing. I don't know that I really paid attention what was going on in that dining room that when we walked in, because we were outside most of the time. Although I think what I saw was it's got a lot of wood and it's a little bit clubby, and but then there's like a big tree in the middle. It's like the Hobbit Warren. So I was like, it's like a Hobbit Warren meets the country club. But I don't think you care, because the move here is go outside.
Did you eat outside?
We did.
We ate in the dining room. It was a little bit cool. What I was very aware of in the dining room was the bar. They're like 2 to 3 deep, and people wait. I had a reservation. There had to be a 2-hour wait at that restaurant, and nobody was leaving. Everyone's waiting out the wait. And the other thing I was aware of was that Rich Melman was there, because this is a new restaurant, and that's what Rich Melman does when Lettuce opens a restaurant. He hangs out. So I'm going to say service was pitch perfect, but I don't think that's an issue whether Rich Melman is there or not.
No, I don't think so either. I mean, I think that I would say RJ and his brother and his sister, they're the next generation. And usually what happens, the next generation ruins the family business. And I honestly think these guys are taking it to the next level in a way that we can expect many great restaurants to come. So one of the things you recently told me is your love of hummus. And you pronounce it like a true Israeli, so I apologize for butchering it, like a white guy from Chicago. But so, in fact, say the word, because I love how you say it.
Hummus.
Yes, exactly.
My true Israeli relatives would laugh at me, so
yes.
You're the bottom, I'm the middle.
Well, you know, it's funny. Have you listened to the Rahm Emanuel Chicago podcast?
I haven't.
It's actually pretty fantastic, and anytime there's like a Yiddish term, like Rahm gets really excited and pronounces it correctly, and I kind of love that thing.
Kind of rolls it around
in
his mouth.
He loves it. But it's funny because everybody always tells him, like they start asking him questions, and he's like, yo, this is my podcast. He's like, we're not going to get Talmudic. You do not ask the questions I ask. So it's funny. He's still Rahm, even when he's on the podcast. But I digress. So you love hummus, but my theory on hummus is the reason it's so popular is that no one really loves hummus. What they love is they love salt and garlic and tahini, right? Because if you just mashed up chickpeas and didn't put any of that stuff in it, I don't think you're going to love it. It's sort of like mashed potatoes. It's the amalgamation of all the stuff, right?
Here in the United States.
Yeah, yeah.
You also have to have the nice, freshly made warm pita.
Yes. But what I believe is, I guess my point is, I believe hummus is a good blank canvas, which is sort of like a Rorschach test for people, which is like what you put on it is what's most important. And there's a lot of different options at Abba.
Right.
And I'll tell you what I had, just blown away, right? Because again, since I can't pronounce hummus correctly and I am a red-blooded American who like, apparently only drinks Budweiser, what does somebody like me love? I love beef, right? And they do a crispy short rib with grilled onion and this really thick gravy on top of it. And it's like, one, I'm surprised by this, right? Because I just told you CJ Jacobson was a former volleyball player. So I assume he was like a hippie. And I also assume he's probably a vegetarian, which I know is probably not true and I'm making assumptions. But whatever's going on, he like really has a way with beef and hummus. So this is definitely not your vegetarian hummus.
I had avocado and fava bean hummus, because they have things under the hummus category, and it was green and grassy and really, really lovely, and was punched up with jalapeno, so they passed my hummus litmus test, although it's sort of designer brand hummus, because truly, just plain hummus can be fantastic. Honestly.
I will say the one thing that makes me angry about hummus is Sabra is doing this thing where they like pair it with like pretzels and stuff. And ooh. I'm like, that's not a good look, right? Like pretty soon it's going to be like the yogurt. So you're going to have like M&Ms and you like dip them in the hummus.
Oyster crackers.
Hummus. So, yeah. I don't love that move. But the hummus here is like, it's not the stuff in the can. It's not Sabra. It's like freshly made. You mentioned fava beans. You know, one of the things that's really interesting is like, everybody's used to having like hummus with chickpeas or falafel with chickpeas. But, you know, I know the original falafel is actually from fava beans. The Coptic Christians in Egypt, that was like where falafel came from. And so they're really getting back to basics here with CJ.
Well, he did his homework. And I loved that dish. And I also loved, I had the crispy short ribs also. And I just found them a little chewy, but in the most comforting way imaginable, like the way they're supposed to be chewy and stay in your mouth for a while. I loved that dish. It felt like street food in the most irresistible setting.
So if you are a vegetarian, I had the red beet tzatziki. I don't know if you had that, but well, the fun fact about me is I'm like first generation. My mom was born in Poland. So I'd go to like my babcia's house and there was always this weird jar in the back of the fridge, like with pink, neon pink mush. And I'd always look at it and I was horrified. And I'm like, I don't know what that is, but it was there. And I think they brought it over in like 1941 when they came over and it never left the fridge. But if you grew up like that, this is the stuff you'll recognize. But this is like a way better horseradish spiked fresh version of beets. It's bursting with spice, and I loved it. It was like fireworks, basically, in a vegetarian form.
That's great. We had the muhammara.
Mm-hmm.
Someone can write me and tell me if I pronounced it wrong. That's the roasted pepper spread, and it's got chili, walnut, pomegranate, molasses. I think that was our very favorite, and we liked all of our starters. But this was the one where you have the fight over the last scoop.
So I kept going down a vegetarian theme a little bit. So falafel. You know what? It was a little bit dry. It was like the one thing I didn't like. I liked almost everything I ate there. And it was better than like delivery falafel, you know, which is always dry. But I have to say in Chicago, I don't know if you've got a good recommendation, but I'm still sort of looking for the mind-blowing falafel. That's so like if you were thinking about opening like a fried chicken shack or a Nashville fried chicken shack or a donut shop, because that's apparently all anybody can open right now, mm-hmm. You should go for the falafel shack because nobody's doing it.
No one's doing it right. I agree. We got, have you noticed stracciatella lately on menus?
Yes.
Is it overtaking burrata?
I'm over it. Like
you're already over stracciatella.
Yeah, I'm over anything mozzarella, which I, you know, it's just everywhere. It's like, you know, because it keeps reminding me of like the Caprese salad, you know, which again,
that's exactly what I said.
I made one myself at home the other day with the backyard garden tomatoes. It's a beautiful thing, but it's like, I don't want to pay $20 for one, you know?
Right. So they do the stracciatella and they make a big deal out of it being stretchy and fantastic. And it was bright and refreshing, but you're right. That's something any of us could do at home.
Did you have the sesame shrimp?
Nope. I had skirt steak shawarma. Loved it, loved it, loved it. And this is where the heart of the menu departs from Ema, because the menu looks the same. It has some of the same items, but the middle of the menu has meat, much more meat than you have at Ema. And as you said, this guy knows how to do meat.
So the sesame shrimp, instead of having like a panko crust or that kind of thing, they sort of use the texture of sesame. And it was like really flaky and crispy. I think this is becoming a theme for me where I like refer to fast food because I eat a lot of it and I'm a terrible human being. But like the Rippin' Chicken from Popeyes, it had this kind of like flakiness, which this is not an indictment. I think Popeyes is like the greatest fast food chicken in the world. You know what's interesting is they served it with a green chili harissa sauce, which for people is basically like green chili sauce or a green chili hot sauce, I should say. But I don't know if that was like the original incarnation of the dish. And then somebody was like, hey, if I'm going to eat like fried shrimp, I need like a pina colada dipping sauce or sweet chili or something, because that's what a lot of people do.
Right.
So on the side, there was like a little like sweet chili marmalade or something. So I don't know if that was an add-on or it was always there. But either way, I like both dips.
It worked for you. Yeah. Okay. We had the Everything Jerusalem Bagel. I recommend it. and it came with za'atar, and maybe, I can't help it, I've had that bagel in the old city of Jerusalem, right out of the flaming ovens with the crunchy sesame seeds on top and a little brown bag of za'atar. And I would say that CJ has a little bit more to do on this particular. Sometimes you shouldn't try to be so authentic because you're going to fail.
All of Chicago has a bagel problem. I don't know if you feel that way, but it just like we talked about earlier with falafel, it's really tough to find a great bagel in the city.
A Jerusalem bagel isn't like a bagel. It's like this giganda ring, and it's a different texture. I think the Jerusalem bagel at Abba will do very well, but I have to say it's not the best I've ever had. Sorry.
Did you do dessert?
Oh, we did dessert, but we had chicken. You know I always order chicken.
We had
chicken kefta.
I feel like we need to insert like a clucking sound every time you say the word chicken now.
I'll make it quick. Top score for savory texture. It needed a little more seasoning, but it was a nice dish. We had kulfi, the double chocolate tart, and the halva. Oh, I hear you're a big fan of halva.
Chocolate covered halva.
Ina Pinkney told me.
Yes.
I have some in the refrigerator that's nice. From the old country.
Nice. Yeah, so the Hoiva brand chocolate, I could basically OD on that. Like someday somebody's going to find me covered with Hoiva wrappers, covered in chunks of chocolate halva. So from a dessert standpoint, as a food critic, as somebody who understands food in a deep way, has experienced it over the course of your lifetime, like, what are, like, the top three cliche desserts in fine dining, would you say?
Oh, I guess we're past creme brulee.
Right, creme brulee would certainly be on my list.
And there was the molten chocolate cake for quite a long time.
That's all I need, right? Like, you just gave me the two that I would have said. And, of course, creme brulee, right? Like, just like I bagged on caprese salad, I don't need another creme brulee, right? But they did a creme brulee pie, which was almost like a cheesecake, which everybody out there, cheesecake and creme brulee are basically the same thing. They're just like a different custard. But what I loved about it was instead of just being like a cheesecake, they bruleed the top like with a sugar crust, like a creme brulee. And it was a really smart riff on the classic that made me say, okay,
That's cool.
I can do creme brulee again. You know, I think Alinea did that caprese a few years ago. That was like 27 different elements. And, you know, so if you do something right, you can still do the cliche.
And, right.
You know, the only thing I would say here, and this has been a pet peeve of mine, they served nectarines on the side that were stone hard. And it's like, it is nectarine season, but that tells me the chef didn't taste the produce delivery, or that he was like, you know what? What am I going to do? I got all these things. I'm just going to put it out there. And that's just like a little bit of a detail. You know, it's not a big deal. I'm not getting hung up on it. But please don't serve hard stone fruit.
I agree. It's like when people serve winter tomatoes. Just take it off the menu for a while. Give it a break. But I thought the halva plate was nice. It felt very of the region and of the menu, and it was a nice way to end. And it had medjool dates and candied nuts and just enough of that oily halva, shreddy mouthfeel.
So where are you on the fork scale?
I really enjoyed Abba. I'm tines up.
You're one full fork up?
I'm a full fork.
Not just like three tines, two tines?
No.
You've been riding the tines.
It's not equivocal here.
I'm going to agree with you. Definitely two forks up from both of us. And, you know, the first time CJ came to town, the fun fact is he actually yelled at me a little bit on our interview, said that they'd only been open 2 weeks and how dare I review the restaurant, which is something we could talk about in a whole other podcast. Is that something you should do? To which I, of course, said my trademark, well, were you charging full price? And the answer is yes. Therefore, I can say whatever I want. And so CJ probably doesn't even remember. He doesn't even care who I am. But I've had a tough history with him. But I love this restaurant.
I love this
restaurant.
This
is not Ima. This is a completely separate thing.
I know, and I was so afraid it would be just a weak spinoff, like, oh, Ima's doing well, so let's do Abba. And then we'll use the Hebrew word for children, and we'll just keep going. But it's its own place. It's got verve. It's got personality. I love this restaurant.
You've been listening to Dining Out Loud podcast. If you like what you hear, you can subscribe via iTunes or Google Play, or anywhere you listen to podcasts. You can also go straight to our website, dollpodcast.com or diningoutloudpodcast.com. You can also follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Dining Out Loud.